Welcome to Perfectville, your first place podcast of your Miami Dolphins. I am Sam Marcoux. He is Chris Cullen. This is episode 101 and part one of two. That's right, a two-parter, ladies and gentlemen, on the draft that just passed here for the Miami Dolphins and the NFL as a whole. We call it the Draftermath. We're going pick by pick. We're analyzing everything the Miami Dolphins did. And we're going to go even further than that and get into the undrafted free agents in part two, as well as some of the roster moves the Miami Dolphins have made since then. Chris, what are your thoughts about the draft as a whole overall?
Well, first of all, I'm sad it's gone because now we're in that dry spell of nothing until really training camp starts. As far as news, tumbleweeds are going by as I speak. But the draft itself, I'm actually very happy with. I think we came out with some top talent, guys that can help and impact immediately. And I think it was a win a long way, a showing of where our mentality is as a front office for our team and some of our big name players.
Yeah, I think I want to explore what this type of draft meant, because I think this is a very much a defining draft as to what we're doing, what our mindset is as a team, as a franchise. But before we get to that and we look at the draft, I do want to take a quick look back at the Finzies, which was episode 100. Chris, you were there. I were there. Our pants were not there. Travis Wingfield was there. We had special guests out the wazoo, and I thought it was a tremendous success. I appreciate your efforts on that episode. I appreciate my efforts on that episode. We want to thank all the citizens of Perfectville for once again coming out in droves. You guys really responded to what we did on that episode. However, Chris, I do need to point out we do have a new customer review on Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes. And as we've been mentioning for a very long time, if you give us a five-star rating and a review, you qualify for a Perfectville Sipsack Koozie, a Rondé Bagston, as we like to call him. You can also buy those on welcometoperfectville.com. But this particular review, Chris, does not qualify for a Sipsack Koozie.
Weird.
Yeah, and the reason why is that this is a three-star review, the first three-star review in Perfectville history. And we always read these things, good, bad, or otherwise, so we have to read it. But this comes from TR Sears. Or TRS ears. I'm not sure. Again, these usernames are ridiculous. But it says, meh, three stars. There is as much attempts to be humorous as there is talk about football. Well, that's true. The Finzies episode was on the verge of horrible. Finzies was spelled wrong, by the way. There is some good stuff in here from time to time, but you have to put up with the sideshow to get any good information. It's probably about twice as long as it needs to be. Well, that's very hurtful, TRS ears, or TR Sears, or to Sirs, whatever your name happens to be. That episode was very long, but that was by design. So if this was your first episode of listening to Perfectville, you don't usually get an hour and a half. It's usually about a 30-minute show. So I could understand that critique, if you will. But Rondé Bagston for you. Right, Chris? I mean, this doesn't qualify.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he even wants one. And to be honest, nothing says bankrupt review much like somebody with the name Sears. Yeah. So thanks a lot, douche. Now I mean whatever, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, really, it's funny though, we haven't ever lied about what our show is. Since the beginning, we've always been tongue-in-cheek, bar talk, funny stuff with sprinkle in some actual analytics and football talk. But to each his own. I'm glad he doesn't qualify for Sipsack Susie. Now we got an extra one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess go back to listening to the Finsider. Although he still gave us three, he gave us three stars. You know, it's still the majority of stars you can get out of five. So I guess thank you. Our average is still at five stars after all these reviews. But we like to.
That's like the old lady that's like, I hate it. This is a terrible product. Five stars.
Yeah, it's like,
and it's like, wait, it doesn't make sense. Your stars don't. I don't know if the rating system means what you think it means, but we'll take.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like all 10 times I watched Indiana Jones, I hated it. Why do you keep watching the show? It's like this thing. Like, why did you listen to the entire podcast if you didn't like it? But we appreciate it. Thank you for giving the time.
I got to say, Sam, you didn't introduce me as a two-time Hall of Famer. I'm kind of hurt by that.
Oh, God. Here we go. All right. somebody hit. Where's our production team here? Let's start this over. Welcome to Perfectville, your first place podcast of your Miami Dolphins. I am Sam Marcoux, and he is the two-time Hall of Famer, Mr. Chris Cullen. Chris, how are you now, you piece of crap?
Fan-fucking-tastic. Thanks, Sam. Jacket fits perfect.
Yeah, you get in the Hall of Fame twice, and we get our first three-star review. I'm just saying. I'm not sure. But
yeah, maybe there is some correlation there. Maybe there's not. I don't know.
Well, there is some correlation to this show and the draft that just passed, like we talked about here at the top of the show. The NFL draft is now over. All the picks have been picked. All the free agents have been signed in terms of the undrafted ones. And you know what, Chris? We're not going to reinvent the wheel here. We're just going to go pick by pick. We're going to talk about what the Miami Dolphins accomplished, what they did not accomplish. Was it a good draft? Was it a bad draft? Where is this Dolphins team actually going based on what we know now? And we might as well start towards the top here. Obviously, the first pick overall for the Miami Dolphins at number 11, Mr. Mika Fitzpatrick, safety out of Alabama, fits a lot of needs, and we're going to get into him here, but I want to talk about what led up to getting Mika Fitzpatrick, because you know, you and I talked about the draft a little bit on the shows leading up to the actual draft. We had people come on and talk about, you know, wanting a defensive player. I think you and I were very vocal of the fact that we needed to go on the defensive side of the ball. We really didn't care if it was linebacker or somebody like a Mika Fitzpatrick, who I didn't expect to be there at 11, Chris. I don't know about you.
No, not even close. I thought he'd go in the 7 to 9 to 10 range for sure.
Yeah, I thought there was an outside chance that Tampa Bay might take him. I thought there was an opportunity for the Chicago Bears, who ultimately took Roquan Smith. And then I really thought both either the Niners or the Raiders would pick him up. But that's kind of where I wanted to start, because as this draft was playing out and we got to like the 7th and 8th pick, and all of a sudden I was looking at this and I'm doing the math and I go, well, Roquan Smith is there and then he gets taken. Then you had Edmonds, the other linebacker that we all liked. We had Derwin James and we had Mika Fitzpatrick. And I'm thinking, there's a real possibility here, unless all of these folks get, you know, a run right now, there's a real possibility that one of these players is going to fall to us. And once the San Francisco 49ers took Mike McGlinchey, I believe is his name, the offensive tackle out of Notre Dame, it dawned on me, you know what? We're going to get a player. We're going to get one of the players that you and I wanted, that most of the fan base wanted. And at that point, I was really, really happy. And then something weird happened. We kept talking about Josh Rosen, because for the first time in history, we were looking and we were seeing quarterbacks come off the board in record pace, 4 quarterbacks in the first 10 picks. And it looked like maybe Josh Rosen was going to be available for the Miami Dolphins at number 11. And I don't know about you, Chris, but as this was happening, I was starting to get a little bit of a panic going, oh no, we're not going to get our defensive player that we wanted, that we've coveted, that we need. We're going to go try to get another franchise quarterback and have a huge controversy all season long between Ryan Tannehill and Josh Rosen. What were your thoughts when the Oakland Raiders actually traded out of the number 10 pick to the Arizona Cardinals, which at that point pretty much solidified that Josh Rosen was off the board and that we were going to go defense? Were you happy about it? Were you scared? Did you want Josh Rosen? What were your thoughts leading up to pick number 10?
Yeah, we were really excited because I had a top 4. I tweeted it out. We talked about it on the show. And as you mentioned, Roquan Smith was the only one out of those 4 that had been taken. So we had to pick of the litter of 3 guys I wanted. And normally going into these drafts, we always have fan favorites that we want. It never seems to go our way.
Yeah.
You can go back all the way to me literally covering the Hey There Delilah song for Earl Thomas. That's how bad I wanted him. And he fell to us. So we were excited, but we trade down nonetheless. Here we are, and Josh Rosen's there, and I tweeted this as well, and I got a little bit of traction, but I don't know. We'll never know. We've come out and said supposedly that we would not have taken Rosen if Arizona did not jump ahead of us, and if he was there for us at 11, we still would have taken our top defensive guy on the board. We'll never know if that's true or not. You know, Adam Gase didn't take a quarterback at all in the draft, which is crazy because he had said previously, you know, Sam, I think he's just been lying to us because he said he loves Jarvis Landry and that's why he franchise tagged him. He's gone. He said he would love to draft a quarterback every single draft. Didn't happen. The only thing he didn't lie to us about, it seems, is that Ryan Tannehill is a guy and this is his team. We're both pretty pro Tannehill guys, so I'm glad Rosen went before us. And yeah, there he is, Mika Fitzpatrick, a captain from an SEC team, national championship winning team, coached by Nick Saban, real student of the game, bright player, playmaker. And we actually pulled the trigger on it. I was expecting a guard or a defensive tackle, but there we are, Mika Fitzpatrick, number 11 of the Miami Dolphins. And I don't know if we did on purpose with all the quarterback smokescreen talk, but it worked because teams are trading ahead of us and competition for our picks, like the Tampa Bay Bucs and the Raiders, trade below us, leaving us with a pick of the litter.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I did want to mention, too, is Mike Tannenbaum must have missed his flight to the draft or something, because we didn't trade at all, I don't believe. We just sat in our position and let the draft board fall the way it was supposed to fall, and then we picked who we needed to pick. And that goes from the first round all the way through the seventh round. Quite remarkable. I can't remember the last time we didn't trade a draft pick on draft day to move up, even in the later rounds, which seemingly every team does at some point. But not the Miami Dolphins, not this year. And I really like Mika Fitzpatrick with this defense, because you put Rashad Jones, who's signed long term, you put TJ McDonald, who's signed long term, and now you have Mika Fitzpatrick, who can play the nickel, he can play in the slot, he can play outside as a corner, he can be a safety. This allows Matt Burke to really scheme and design a defense where you essentially have an extra defensive back on the field at all times if you really wanted to, but you could actually take TJ McDonald and drop him down as he's a bigger safety, and he can almost be like an inside the box linebacker in a nickel and dime package, and you can have Mika and Rashad Jones roaming around behind him, or you can stick Mika as a nickel corner. There's all kinds of options here, and really you're going to see a theme with this pick and another pick in particular that I'll bring up, but the Miami Dolphins are terrible and have been terrible seemingly my entire life when it comes to covering tight ends. We just can't do it. In fact, last year we were the worst team on defense in covering tight ends statistically. So this is a pick that really helps shore up the middle of the defense, something that's been a problem, a huge problem for a very long time for the Miami Dolphins. And I think us getting one of the top 10 players, I don't think anybody can dispute that, outside of the top 10 and not having to do anything to get it, other than sit there and let the draft play out the way it did, is a huge, huge bonus for the Miami Dolphins. I give this pick an A-plus when it comes to value, when it comes to fulfilling a need, when it comes to getting basically a super athlete on the field. I can't speak negatively about this at all. I am excited about this first-round pick.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Sam, and we always kind of tongue-in-cheek joke about this, but we always say we're bad enough to get to never win a Super Bowl, but we're never good enough. Or I'm sorry, let me stop, pause,
that hurt
rephrase
my head.
That. Yeah, sorry. We're never good enough to win a Super Bowl, but we're never bad enough to make a big enough difference to get a first, second overall pick, except the Jake Long type situation. But if you drop Mink and Fitzpatrick in any draft the last few years, there's no way he falls to 11. I mean, this guy's getting compared to Patrick Peterson, Honey Badger, and Eric Berry, and he's fallen to us at 11. And we just had to sit there to do it. Like you said, we didn't trade up. We didn't trade back. We didn't lose any draft capital, any players, anything like that. And he just falls to us because of how heavy the quarterback position was in this draft. It was a dream come true to get a top 10 talent like that to just fall to you at 11. This might be the first time we can say that phrasing that I started this whole sentence with is not the case. We actually got an impactful, game-changing player that will change the franchise, and we didn't have to be god-awful 0-16 to do it. So it was a hell of a pick. I loved it, man. Like we just went ballistic in the Dolphins man cave.
And what's interesting about this too is that you have this basically this dichotomy when it comes to the draft. Do you pick need or do you pick best overall player? And I think when it comes to Mika Fitzpatrick and when it comes to the next pick, Mike Gesicki, tight end out of Penn State, we were able to kind of merge those two, where the best player on the board is also somebody that really fills a need, either on defense or offense. In this case, Mika Fitzpatrick, we needed defensive help, especially on the back end of the defense, be it linebacker or defensive back help. Mika does that for us. It's not a bad thing at all. Going into the second round here, Mike Gesicki, tight end, Penn State. We really needed a tight end. We haven't had a good quality tight end in a very long time.
Yeah.
And you look at this guy's measurables, again, Chris, this guy is kind of like Jimmy Graham, Tyler Eifert, all the name tight ends that are just amazing players offensively in the league, roped into one. He's like a healthy Tyler Eifert, and this guy runs faster than most wide receivers. He lifts weights more than most, you know, defensive and offensive linemen. This guy catches everything thrown his way. The only thing he can't do is block, but you know what? We didn't get him to block. We got him to be a target for Ryan Tannehill. This is your Jarvis Landry replacement, at least in theory. This is the guy that Ryan Tannehill can find, get him the ball, and let him go make something happen in space. I love this pick. I was torn between him and Dallas Goedert, but I the more and more I watch on Mike Gesicki, the more I love this tight end pick at number 42 overall.
this guy was planned to be Gronk's replacement. The stories have come out that New England traded back, not only after we picked this kid, because he was on their board and they wanted him bad. And since we took him, they traded down because there wasn't anybody else worthy of staying in their pick. So if that says anything to you and how they've utilized the tight end position, how Belichick and that offense and that system uses a tight end, and knowing how much Adam Gase's offense runs through solid tight ends, this kid has an insane catch radius. Tannehill can just put it anywhere up in the air, and this guy's going to go find it and go catch it. Like you said, faster than most receivers, stronger than left tackles. His measurables at the combine were just absolutely ridiculous. I think they're the second best overall of all time as far as like actual every single one, long jump, broad jump, bench press, 40 time, cone drill, those things all there. I mean, he graded out insanely, and he's playing against real solid competition in the Big Ten. So this is just unreal. And anybody saying anything about his blocking ability, who gives a shit? Who gives a shit? Like, honestly, somebody tweeted about it. Antonio Gates, was he known for his blocking? No, he's going to the Hall of Fame, guys. Like, who cares? Like, this is a passing league. We're in the shotgun 60, 70% of the time. Having that mismatch there to take advantage of linebackers and defenses that have been historically bad like ours, this is the pick for that, man. Getting him into second round after Minka, I was looking at my dad like, holy shit, are we actually having a good draft? I don't know how to feel about this.
Yeah, quite frankly, if you just walked away and you traded away all the rest of the picks of the draft, I still would have said this is a positive draft. I mean, you filled two needs with two, quite possibly the best players at their respective positions in this draft, in Minkah Fitzpatrick and Mike Gesicki here. And, you know, like you said, in terms of the measurables, just to kind of put it in perspective, Mike Gesicki has a 41-inch vertical in terms of his jump. Vince Carter, yes, that Vince Carter, 43 inches. So we're talking about maybe the greatest dunk, greatest slam dunker in basketball history. And Mike Gesicki is basically looking at him in the eye when they jump. So, you know, this guy is 6'6". He catches everything. Like you said, I think he only dropped 5 catchable balls out of 110 at his career at Penn State. The dude just knows how to get it done when it comes to catching the ball. And in terms of the blocking, well, more on that later, because we have an elixir for that coming up here in a couple of picks. But before that, I did want to talk about Jerome Baker, linebacker, Ohio State. Something tells me Adam Gase watches, or at least Matt Burke watches, a lot of Ohio State games, does he not?
Yeah, Ohio State linebacker seems to be the bell of the ball for these guys. So we go out, we get McMillan last year, and then in the third round here, again, great value, Sam. This guy in 2016, if he were to come out, he was being graded as first round talent. And now he's sitting there at the 73rd overall pick in the third round. And we draft this guy, almost the same amount of measurables, height and weight wise, as Roquan Smith. Yep. Speed is fantastic. He's stronger than you would think. If you look at tape and stuff that's been passed around on Twitter, this guy's been pancaking offensive linemen to get to the quarterback. He's aggressive. Sam, you talked about it before we started this discussion, but we really showed our hand at what our plan is to do, and that is to have a passing attack offense with speed and mismatches and a defense that can fly around sideline to sideline, speed. I mean, there's just unbelievable amount of speed that's been added to this team in free agency and during the draft. Minka Fitzpatrick, Mike Gesicki, Jerome Baker, add him with McMillan there. And then what you were talking about with the mismatches with safeties. Now we have McDonald that can come down in a nickel situation, but play all three downs as an outside linebacker and somebody that can cover. We're not losing anything with Fitzpatrick playing center field and Rashad Jones at strong safety and the speed at linebacker. Now, all of a sudden, somebody had mentioned this before. We are showing our hand all the time on defense. On first down, we'd have your Mike Holes, the Chase Allens on the field that are just like run stoppers. So what would they do? They would do short passes to attack the middle of our defense and just completely carve us up. Now you can't do that. And now we can blitz. And now we can disguise coverages. Now we can really get after the quarterback. And this is something we talked about, Sam, losing Ndamukong Suh, arguably the number one defensive tackle in the league. But if you replace him with 6 guys around that position, we can afford to lose him. And that's what we've done here. And I really am excited about the speed and the way we can attack this defense.
Yeah, this was the first pick that when it came on the board, I went, oh, that's not who I expected them to pick. And then as I did some research and watched some tape and listened to everyone, I went, this pick makes a lot of sense. Like you said, We struggled, especially against tight ends and, let's be honest, running backs that can catch the ball. So now you have Micah Fitzpatrick who can line up and go up against Rob Gronkowski when we're playing the Patriots. You have Jerome Baker who can actually break up a screen pass to Shady McCoy and make sure he doesn't go for 50 freaking yards every single time he catches the ball with seven linemen in front of him. You know, this guy, I don't know if he's going to be an every down back for us, but what he does is he shores up the middle of that defense where we have had just basically a weak spot for I don't even know how long, Chris. You pair him in the middle with Raekwon McMillan, actually Raekwon to be in the middle. He's on the weak side. If you can keep him clean, if you can keep blockers off of him, I think this is a guy who can go out and do some damage. He's a sure tackler. He can run up and down the field. He can cover. He's got a pedigree. He went to a big school, and he's played with Raekwon McMillan in the past. In fact, the best ball he ever had was with Raekwon right by his side. So you team those two back up again. I don't think it'll be too long before Jerome Baker is a name that is on the back of a lot of jerseys with Dolphins everywhere.
Yeah, if you think about it and actually break it down this way, we got this is what we're going into the season with. Minkah Fitzpatrick as a first-round pick, Gesicki as a second-round pick, McMillan as a second-round pick because he missed all of last year, and then Baker as a third-round pick. If that was an actual draft class, like we would be ecstatic with that turnout to get a tight end like that and two linebackers back-to-back, both that were familiar. And you look at this, Adam Gase has done something here, Sam, that we used to like almost get too smart for our own good in the drafts in the past where we draft these like small school guys or captains, team leaders, four-year starters. Adam Gase is going out and getting guys that are coached by Saban, coached by Urban Meyer that have played in big four playoff games at Penn State and, you know, with just huge 100,000 seat crowds where the pressure isn't there anymore. And if you look at what's going on, we're getting these guys from big schools, big talent that are used to that kind of coaching style. I mean, he comes from Nick Saban's tree, Adam Gase does. So to get a guy like Minkah Fitzpatrick, Mike Gesicki, Jerome Baker, and then adding McMillan, a second round pick, I mean, this just screams excitement. Like, I'm very, very excited about this draft. And again, Sam, I don't know how to feel about it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling to know that, you know, hey, we did right. Like, what do you mean? Usually we're celebrating the touchdown on the 1 yard line and throw that ball away on accident. But no. And you're right. They pick players from the Power Five conferences. And we're actually going to talk about that here before too long. And we might as well get into the next one here because we talked about the lack of blocking for Mike Gesicki. Well, they kind of addressed that with the next pick, number 123 overall, tight end out of Notre Dame, Durham Smythe. Now, you know, look, everyone says it, so I'm not going to discount it or say anything different. This is Anthony Fasano 2.0. You know, this is this is our guy that's going to be the inline blocker. He's the one that you're going to bring in on your goal line packages and your jumbo sets. He's going to be the guy that's going to block 80% of the time, and then 20% of the time he's going to look like he's blocking and then bleed out into the flat and catch a touchdown from 2 yards away, and it's going to frustrate the hell out of defenses when that happens. I mean, how often does that happen to the Miami Dolphins when some seemingly no-name blocking tight end is all of a sudden catching a touchdown against our defense because it's not anybody that we really account for in terms of passing skills? But this is the guy that's going to be blocking. He's going to be in the game, and this is what basically Adam Gase is going to do, is say, hey, this is our blocking tight end. He's going to block you. Go ahead and stop it. You know, he's going to challenge them to do that. And then we're going to line up Gesicki out in the flat as like the third or fourth wide receiver and say, go ahead and stop him. You know, this is basically measurables and talent that he's just going to line up and say, our guys are physically better than your guys. It doesn't matter the scheme. It doesn't matter if you know what we're doing.
One of my favorite coaches in high school, Sam, would call the same play 5-6 times in a row. If we were getting 4 to 5 yards per carry, he would tell us to go up to the line of scrimmage and point at them, point at the linebackers, point at the defensive line and say, that same play is coming right here. We're running the same play again. We're letting you know. And there's nothing worse as a defense to get beat by that over and over again and just get the dominance asserted against you. And if you look at all the pieces that Adam Gase has brought in with Albert Wilson, with that speed, with Jakeem Grant getting a bigger role towards the end of last year, with the speed of Drake, I don't care if we go out there with Smythe and Gesicki in a two tight end set and tell the defense, hey, like, yeah, match your guy best with our best and see what you do, because we got speed, mismatches, and measurables that there's going to be a crack somewhere. Stills is going to be running free. Parker's going to have a short corner on him. Something's going to happen. And Adam Gase is completely sitting in a room right now, like Montgomery Burns saying, excellent,
yeah.
Because this is just coming down exactly how he's wanted it.
No, this is. And we've rebuilt our tight end core, and we've done it not with free agency for once. We've actually are doing this with players that we're drafting. These are Miami Dolphins players. So this offense is now completely in Adam Gase's image here. And it gives us a little bit of depth as well. I mean, nothing against the tight ends from years past, but you know, even Julius Thomas, all these guys, if they go down, there was nobody behind him. Not that Durham Smythe is a game breaker by any means. He's kind of lumbering, and again, he is a blocking back. But you have somebody in the pipeline that you can develop. Maybe you can develop those pass catching and route running skills while in the meantime he excels at blocking. You know, kind of accentuate his strength and hide his weakness in the background. And who knows? Ultimately, down the road, he might be the guy that everyone, you know, isn't expecting to catch touchdown passes and does that. So I love it. I love the fact that we have a couple new tight ends. I love the fact that we addressed needs with.
And we still have Gray. We still have Gray. And Tannehill,
it's true.
If you all remember, Tannehill really liked Gray. Gray can get behind the defense. Gray can get behind the defense, and Tannehill will throw him the ball. He trusts him fully. And you can see an offense with a two tight end set and putting Gray at H-back or a fullback offset from with Drake at the running back position. That's a mismatch nightmare. Because you got Gesicki, who your safety or best cover linebacker has to take, and Gray can now come out of the backfield and leak into the flat. So, I mean, the options are just endless there. We went from having one former quarterback at tight end to that being one of our strongest positions on offense, Sam, in one draft. And that's just fantastic drafting by the front office and Adam Gase.
Yeah, and, you know, another guy, this next pick, Chris, is the one that probably – brings the biggest smile to my face, and that would be Kalen Ballage, running back out of Arizona State. Not because I think this guy is going to set the world on fire, but because this is very Bill Belichick-esque in terms of what this pick is. Do you happen to know where we got this pick, number 131 overall, Chris?
I was thinking that we got this pick from Jay Ajayi.
Yeah, we did. We traded Jay Ajayi to the Philadelphia Eagles, and stop me if you've heard this before, a running back, a bigger back that could do just about anything out of the backfield, but has maybe some challenges with motivation, challenges with personality. This is Adam Gase giving a big middle finger to Jay Ajayi. You cannot tell me, you cannot convince me that he just picked Kalen Ballage and it just so happened to be at the same exact pick that we got for Jay Ajayi. This is top of mind. Adam Gase going, I don't need Jay Ajayi. I'll go get Jay Ajayi 2.0 and we'll be more successful with this version than that version. Granted, Jay Ajayi went on to win the Super Bowl last year and we all, you know, are happy for him on some level, but you know, he does fill a need. I mean, this is a guy that you're going to pair with Kenyon Drake, and you're going to have Frank Gore as their mentor in the running back room. This guy can hit people. He can outrun people. He once scored 8 touchdowns in a college football game.
It's ridiculous.
The guy can catch. He can run. He can do just about everything as long as he's motivated. So as long as he's got his head on right and he, you know, does the right things, this could be a steal a little bit later in the route in the draft here.
I love this pick, Sam, and for all those reasons. And the funniest thing, too, is not only is he Jay Ajayi 2.0 or light, I mean, he's faster and he can do the one thing Jay Ajayi really can't, and that's catch the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah.
And that's something Adam Gase really needs and demands from his running backs so he can call a more balanced offense. So getting this guy and watching his highlights, never heard of him before. Of course, I'm not going to act like, you know, I'm some expert and fully hoping to get this guy in the fourth or fifth round. I looked him up after and his measurables are insane. The dude's like built like a brick house, 228 pounds, but he's fast. You're watching highlights of him outrunning defensive backs. But then also towards the end of some plays, he's running them completely over. The guy's a monster. He just is, if he's motivated, Sam, and he's coming into this backfield with a, you know, 87-year-old Frank Gore and a unproven Kenyon Drake, he's right now in one of the greatest positions he can be in. Normally a fourth, fifth round back, you're going in and maybe you're filler for a guy that's already just like locked down the starting running back position. Nope, he's coming in. He fully can win the job if he impresses Adam Gase.
I think this is going to be one of those players that towards the end of his rookie season is going to come on and we're going to go, man, this guy right now, you know, why wasn't he in the starting lineup earlier in the year? And he's going to need a little bit of seasoning, I think. One thing that somebody pointed out, and I do not remember who it was, but they mentioned that he runs kind of high. So in the NFL, he's going to have to try to get a little bit lower. He's going to have to use his legs. But that is definitely something that he's going to have to look at, because I heard that, and then I watched him after that, and knowing that, and I went, you know what, he does run a little bit high. He hits the hole a little bit too vertical, I think, for our for your liking in the NFL. But if he can correct that, and that's a coaching issue, if he can get down a little bit more and still have that explosiveness and still have that ability to break tackles, he is going to be a monster towards the end of this season, in my opinion. And again,
well, and you can't really discount, Sam, sorry to cut you off, you can't discount having Frank Gore in that locker room with him either.
I agree.
And, you know, you're bringing this kid in, motivation issues. Frank Gore's looking at him like, dude, I had multiple torn ACLs and everybody gave up on me. I came from a draft class from the University of Miami where I was literally the 10th, 12th, 13th guy talked about because of how good that draft class is. I am still the only one going from that draft class. So let me tell you about how to be a pro young man and put his arm around him. I mean, this kid could really benefit from having Frank Gore in that locker room and in that film room all season.
And that's why we have Frank Gore, quite frankly. I mean, sure, he's going to contribute on the field, but really his contributions off the field, in the locker room, in the film room, teaching these kids how to start and, more importantly, how to finish is why we have Frank Gore, in my opinion. Speaking of finishing, we are finishing up part one of the Draftermath right now. Stay tuned for part two, where we'll get to the other picks that happen in the NFL draft, as well as all the undrafted free agents, who we like, who we don't like, what the Miami Dolphins did not do that we think they should have, as well as some free agent moves that they've made here since the draft. My name is Sam Marcoux. His name is Chris Colon. Goodbye from Perfectville.
Later.
Perfectville.
Blockbuster like you've never seen before. In a post-apocalyptic Miami, Florida, one man must protect all who stands behind him from the one back destined to meet him in the middle. This summer, Tannenbaum Pictures brings to you in 4D the cinematic feature 5 to 7 years past its prime, when one cop has lived a life protecting those that run behind him has to face his true test. Will he turn and fight, or protect him till the end? Only you can find out. August 2018, Gore vs. Kilgore, back to Miami. See it in IMAX or standard 8 and 8 definition. Tickets on sale now.